Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And if you hear right now a little jangle in the background, and it sounds like, what is that jingle jangle sound? That is my dog's collar. My dog, Jasmine. Hey, Jasmine. Is a greyhound, and she is normally super chill. She normally just sleeps all the time and then runs every once in a while, does what we call zoomies. But right now she suddenly decided that she's gonna play right when I'm recording a podcast. So if you hear that in the background, just picture a super fun, playful dog and you'll be right at home with me. So the topic today is something that I have been thinking about. And it's actually something that I interviewed one of the experts on. So it's this idea of having students show their work or share their process, not just their product. And I think this is important for design thinking. It's important for having students do project-based learning in the launch. We tend to focus a lot on making sure there is an authentic audience for that finished work that students do, but there's also some real value in having students share their process, partly because it helps them grow in their metacognition and in their knowledge about things, but also in just the fact that it inspires other students and gives other folks out there the chance to check out the process. So that's what we're going to be getting into in today's episode. And I actually, about 2 weeks ago, interviewed Austin Kleon. Now, Austin Kleon is the author of the book Show Your Work, which fits into this category, also Steal Like an Artist. He is one of my favorite thinkers on the topic of creativity. And so when he reached out about doing a podcast, I said, absolutely, I would love to interview you. And I actually got to talk to him for an hour. And then we just hung out and talked for, I guess, another hour after that. He was super generous with his time. And it was kind of one of those like meeting your hero kind of moments. It's really cool. But today I want to talk about this idea of students sharing their process and not just their product. So I'm going to begin with a quick story, which I often do. When I was a kid, I loved watching reality TV. Okay, it wasn't really reality TV. It was PBS. We didn't have cable, and my parents were dead set on not giving us, 300 TV channels. So we watched a whole lot of public broadcasting. But I would watch an entire season of this show called This Old House, as Bob Vila walked viewers step-by-step through the cumbersome process of remodeling and restoration. Now, this show never included the choose your three options techniques that you see on HGTV or the surprising ending with people crying. It just wasn't like that. Instead, the homeowners were part of the process and they got to watch it as it was happening. And on some level, so were the viewers. The progress was slow, painfully slow, like PBS style of slow. Like maybe this show is actually even slower than Caillou level slow. And as a dad, I just gotta say, I love the fact that Caillou is now off the air. But I also, in watching this slow process of restoring a home, I felt like I actually learned how home improvement happened. True, I didn't get the big reveal that I would get in an HGTV show, and I didn't get to see the magic transformation of ugly shab carpet into nice brand new hardwood or vinyl floors. I didn't see the knocking out of wall and then, 30 minutes later, it's a totally open floor plan. But in the process, I just learned a lot about restoring a home. And if nothing else, I gained a respect for those who engage in this kind of work. I was under no illusion that true restoration can happen in 3 days or 4 days or even a month. It just takes time. And this was actually the same way I felt as a kid watching Bob Ross paint Happy Little Trees. Now, I knew that there were better artists out there. My mom had taken us to museums with famous paintings. And for what it's worth, as a kid, I loved contemporary art. I still do. Modern art, contemporary art. I am amazed by the creativity of what goes on in that type of work. But I also just loved watching Bob Ross. And the more I watched Bob Ross, the more I wanted to paint on my own. The same goes with the segments of this TV show back in the day called Wonderful World of Disney, where I would get a chance to see how they animated films. I loved seeing the painstakingly slow process of animation. I also loved watching the field trips that Mr. Rogers would take, where he would leave his neighborhood and visit a factory or a shop to learn about how they made crayons or how they built a table. Now, you would think that this demystifying element would destroy the magic, but that's not what happened. Instead, I realized that making is magic. It actually made me want to create more and make more as a result. I felt inspired. I remember as a child looking around my house at one point and realizing, holy crap, someone made this stuff. Someone started with an idea and made a design, and now it's in our house. And I just realized everything that was in this world, this made world that I had, took time and curiosity and creativity and innovation. And I was just humbled by this recognition that people devoted their life to stuff that I used on a regular basis. I became more curious, and ultimately that curiosity inspired my creativity. And if not my creativity, at least my appreciation for the creative work of others. Now, on a much more shallow level, let's fast forward years later, and I'm a dad, and my kids introduced me to this YouTube channel. It's called Tiger Tomato, and they make pancake art. I mean, that's literally it. They make art with pancakes. They do like colored pancake batter, and that's it. Really cool looking pancakes. Now, my son was like, Dad, you gotta check this out. And then my daughter was like, Dad, you'll love this. It's so cool. And 20 minutes later, after watching tons of these short pancake art videos, my son looked at me and said, Dad, we're gonna do this, right? And we did. I nodded and grinned. And then an hour later, we were at the store buying pancake supplies and figuring out which kind of bottle we should use. Now, our pancakes were less than impressive. They tasted fine, but they were not that cool. And they did not look as good as the pancake art. But that's okay. For a week, we made pancake art and explored the best methods for getting textures and colors right. And although it was a, quote, shallow work of creativity, it's a reminder that there is no such thing as shallow when it comes to creative thinking. Students learn soft skills when they do something silly, and in the same way my own kids at home were learning vital soft skills as well. I would argue that the pancake art that my middle son was super into and the doodles that he does on the side are part of why he now is creating t-shirts that he's selling on my store. I have a merchandise store. If you check it out, it's johnspencer.threadless.com. And about half of the designs come from my son, who has found his creative voice. And it's small, and it might not seem like a big deal, but it is a big deal to him. And I'm reminded of this idea of showing your work. Austin Kleon describes this process as showing your work. It's the idea that we should share our creative journey with others. It's what happens when you make videos showing your creative process, or when you share snapshots of your work on social media It's what happens when you put yourself out there in the creative community. The way he puts it, Austin Kleon, is that you become a documentarian of what you do. Now, this doesn't mean that you, like, you know, live stream all of your creative work at all times. It's more about the idea of telling your story about what you're doing and then also teaching others to do it as well. You're curating your own creative work as you do it. You're owning your creative influences. You're talking about those things that you nerd out on, and in the process, you're opening the world up to your own creative journey. Now, you see this with kids who engage in an online community centered around their interests. I saw this when a girl in my eighth grade class showed me the 5 novels she had already published on Wattpad. And then she shared her Tumblr where she asked for feedback in the characters and plots she developed. Now, fast forward a few years, she's now in college and she is a creative writing major. And I don't know if she'll ever get published, but the point is she developed as an author, partly because she just opened this world up to everybody. I noticed this when my kids started playing Minecraft and they began watching and creating their own Minecraft videos. Now, there's this guy out there named Henry Jenkins, and he's a professor in, I believe, Wisconsin. I'm not sure. But he describes these as participatory cultures. And he says that these participatory cultures have low barriers to participation. They have strong support for sharing. There's informal mentorship that goes on. Members who believe their contributions matter, and I think that's important. And they also value the participation in others. There's also a sense of social cohesion in these participatory cultures. And what you see in these participatory cultures is that they are often very open and creative rather than consumer-oriented and closed. They are often multi-age, they're often interest-based and centered on those shared interests that they hold together. They are, in many respects, the opposite of the sort of industrial school model that we have. And participatory cultures remind us that creativity isn't a solitary endeavor. It is nearly always to and from a community. It happens collectively. It's part of the zeitgeist, right? Great ideas rarely happen in isolation. Instead, they're part of this constant sharing back and forth of what we're learning and doing and making. And this is why there's a lot of value in sharing our work. There's this professor, Edward Clapp, and he talks about it. He has this great book and an excellent TED Talk on this topic where he describes the biography of an idea, right? That instead of having biographies of people, which tend to treat accomplishments as, you know, singular and individual, we should actually think about the biography of ideas. And then you'll almost always see that there's this interplay of community and that there is a constant interaction. So I want to share right now 7 reasons to show your work. Number 1, showing your work encourages metacognition. When you show your work, you are forced to communicate what you did and did not know in ways that others understand. It becomes a chance to reflect on your own work, but also clarify misconceptions, catch any things that you're not noticing, anything that you need to pick up on, and potentially ask for help. And I would argue that this component really builds up metacognition. Number 2, innovation skyrockets when people share their work. I've written before about what Pixar can teach us about creativity, but there's a lot that you see when they have a culture of participation where people are constantly learning from each other. And when you show your work, you're helping to build this type of community where people can depend on each other, they can give feedback, they can improve, they can grow. And in the end, it leads to better innovation. As a teacher, I've been thinking about this a lot, that there is this thing that happens when staff members, when faculty members share their work with others. I love how George Koros describes how, you know, the smartest person in the room is the room. And what he means isn't the physical room. I mean, that's just drywall and whatnot. He's referring more to this idea that the smartest person is the network of ideas that happen between each other, the community, the collective whole, this interchange back and forth. And I think that's really important, that we as staff members will grow, we as educators will grow when we learn from each other. I'm at a university with a phenomenal group of professors, and we are constantly sharing ideas back and forth. We co-plan informally. It's not even a part of our contract or anything. We share ideas back and forth. And in the process, I would say we have all become more innovative in our practice because we are showing our work. We're talking about what works, what doesn't work, what we're trying, and that's huge. Number three, they become mentors. You see this when students share their process with the world. As they realize that others are watching and noticing, they internalize the idea that they are creative thinkers and problem solvers. Now, I've seen this with pre-service teachers. When they work on their professional educator blogs, they move from simply writing introspective posts to sharing ideas of what works in their classroom. And as that happens, they are able to help the larger community. In other words, they begin to mentor other teachers, even though they are new in their practice. And I think the same thing is true of students. When they can share their work with others, they are engaging in an informal level of mentoring. Now, if you think about the last time you were stuck in how to do something, think about where you went for an answer. It's possible that you called someone on their phone and talked to a mentor. And if you had that person, that is awesome. But there's also a really high likelihood that you went to YouTube or you visited a website. And when this happens, there is an informal mentoring process going on. Too often we think that our work isn't all that special because it doesn't seem new or impressive. But there's a good chance it's new and impressive to someone who is just learning how to do it. So sharing your work becomes a chance to teach others and mentor others along the way. Number four, it can lead to collaborative partnerships. When I think about my favorite collaborative projects, I notice a trend. They are nearly all people I met on Twitter as a part of a professional learning community. What began as an exchange of ideas eventually became a chance to show my work and to look at the work of others, and that morphed into a collaborative relationship. In some cases, these fellow educators have become my close friends. I just got off a Zoom meeting I had with my friend AJ Giuliani, and we met each other on Twitter, and then we shared our ideas on Genius Hour and design thinking, and we talked back and forth on Voxer a bunch when Voxer first came out, and then we wrote a book together, and we led professional development together and made products together, and we've now become just really good friends. I think that's important to recognize that when you start sharing with a community, there's the potential for deeper collaboration and even friendships that happen. Number five, you can change the narrative. This is especially true for teachers. There are so many stories of how awful schools are, how out of touch teachers are. There's this whole thing about, you know, virtual learning has failed, it hasn't worked, it's been awful. You get the idea. All of the negativity that you see about what's going on in schools and how hybrid is a disaster. And yet, when we share our work, when we show what's really going on in the classroom, when we reflect publicly in a safe and careful way, we actually have the chance to change the narrative in education. My friend Tim Lauer was a principal in Portland and now is a principal in Newburgh, about 45 minutes away from where he used to be. But what I love about Tim is that as a principal, he walks around taking snapshots of the creative work of his students and his staff. And this affirms the creative voice of the students, but it also honors the work of the teachers who are the architects of the innovation happening in his school. Now, I want to point out that this isn't self-promotion. It's not branding. And he would never say we need to brand our schools. It's just not what he's doing. He's simply storytelling. But that storytelling, that authentic storytelling, is why people love having their kids at his school. Now, it's also the kind of leader that Tim is, and it's the way he empowers his staff, but it's also changing the narrative so that people see the amazing things happening at his school. Number six, sharing your journey can help build courage. When you share your journey, you're being courageous. You're saying to the world, I'm not afraid to be known. But you're also modeling humility. You're saying, I know that my learning journey is filled with bumps and bruises and scraped knees, but I'm going to go ahead and share it with you anyway. This begins with teachers choosing to share their own journeys. This can feel arrogant for people. It feels like maybe the work that you're doing is not worth sharing, but actually this sharing can help inspire others. There's a courage involved in choosing to share. The same is true for students. When they share their process with others, they learn how to give and receive peer feedback. Now, this can feel scary, but this critical feedback is how they improve their skills as creative thinkers. And then finally, number seven, students embrace the revision process. When students only share their highly finished or highly polished finished work, they miss out on the opportunity to improve their work through multiple revisions. But when they actively share their process and their progress, they internalize the idea that creative work is all about iterations, that there's value in this iterative process. And I think that's really important that they see that every iteration takes you closer and closer to success. And the more they are able to share that with others, the more likely they are to put in the hard work that is the revision process. So, what does this mean? What does this look like? I think it's important that students choose where they share their work. They can choose to share their work with peers or with the teacher. They can share their work with family members at home. They can share their work with a small group, but they might want to move outside of that zone and start sharing their work with the whole class. And that's bold and courageous as well. They might share it with other schools out there that they want to connect with. And you can do things like global partnerships. They might share their work with the entire school and do something like a family night. But at some point, they might want to do global collaboration and they might want to share their work with the entire world. And in the process, not just sharing their finished work, but sharing their journey. It really is up to students and family members. And you want to be respectful of the privacy laws and SIPA and COPPA if you're in the U.S., making sure you're following those protocols and policies. But the idea is to help students figure out, where am I going to share this journey with others? So that's it. That's the idea. There's a lot of value in having students share their work with an authentic audience at the very end, but also with having them share their process and their journey and their insights along the way. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.